we've been talking about all of the ways that we as Christians need to internalize the things that God has given us and how it forms in us a basis for looking at everything that's around us. Tonight we're going to begin talking about what we can learn from science and what we can learn from technology and how God wants us to relate to science and technology. As I have been reading about abortion and the bills that are being introduced that in various legislatures that talk about abortion, it seems that a lot of people are relying on science to tell them when life is created. They're relying on science to give them some sort of input about when life is viable. You know, I studied psychology, and a part of the study of psychology is the study of evolutionary psychology. Where did we get the things that psychologists would label heuristics or the ways that we make decisions? And typically in evolutionary psychology, they'll talk about how these things arose in an evolutionary environment. You know, I read today that we have found frozen water on a particular planet, and there's an argument that life on Earth started in frozen water or could have started in frozen water, and all of this is taken as some sort of evidence of evolution. And as Christians, we're called on to somehow respond to these ideas. It seems to me that Christians have withdrawn from certain fields. You find very few Christians who are psychologists. And I think that's sad, because as Christians, we've ceded the field to people who don't have any kind of respect for God. And because of that, when we look for help in that field, we're confronted with the difficulty of finding somebody that's even God respecting. Not necessarily saying that we're looking for somebody that's a Christian, but we're just looking for somebody that respects the very idea of God. So, with that in mind, let's talk about some biblical information that'll help us understand, or at least have a bit of a grasp of, what a Christian ought to think about science and about technology. So we could talk about origins very quickly. I don't think we have to labor the idea that the observable universe is what it is because of God's creative hand. It did not evolve. It did not become what it is from a non-material beginning. Now, that's not to say that the world around us doesn't change, doesn't in some sense evolve to respond to the things that it encounters. We know that it does. I mean, scientists can breed the wings onto a fruit fly. They can breed the wings off of fruit flies. It doesn't matter. When it's all said and done, it's still going to be a fruit fly. It's just a question of whether it has one set of wings or two sets of wings or three sets of wings, and whether it has wings at all. the world changes, but it does not change fundamentally. And we've already talked about how there is a spiritual world that exists side by side with this physical world that we're a part of. And I hope that we've come to the conclusion that this spiritual world is in some ways more quote unquote real than the physical world that we're looking at. The physical world we're looking at can be full of deceptions. Most of us at one time or another have seen optical illusions. And, you know, you look at something very long and things that aren't moving look like they're moving. Well, it's just an optical illusion. That's the real world that we get to see, but off in the spiritual world, there's not deception like that. That's not to say that there's not an effort by Satan to deceive in the spiritual world, but it's not like the real world. You look at the real world, and sometimes you don't know whether what you're seeing is real or not real when you look at the physical world. I do believe that there's a sense in which God used a consistent set of principles when he made the world. And can we get somebody to read Proverbs 8, starting at 27 and reading down through verse 31?
When he established the heavens, I was there. When he inscribed a circle on the face of the deep, when he made firm the skies above, when the springs of the deep became fixed, when he set for the sea its boundary, so that the water would not transgress his command, when he marked out the foundations of the earth, then I was beside him as a master workman, and I was daily his delight, rejoicing always before him. Rejoicing in the world, his earth, and having my delight in the sons of men.
Okay. So it seems like there is a consistent intelligence behind all of these things. Is anybody familiar with the concept of a natural log or log E? Do you ever look at your calculator and there's that key on there that says log E? Anybody familiar with that? Well, this is a number that seems to describe at its basic core value the relationships that exist between the parts of everything we see. Here's an illustration. If you take a square and then you draw a line that divides the square into what's called, what most scientists would call, a perfect rectangle. A perfect rectangle is 3 units wide and 5 units tall if it's laying on its side. That's a perfect rectangle, 3 by 5. And if you were to draw that line in a square, And then you were to keep going and you squared the 3x5 that you got. You drew the line again and you squared that again and you drew the line. If you connected the midpoints of all of those lines, you would get this beautiful circle. Well, not a circle, but a spiral. And that spiral is the same shape as a conch shell. Now, isn't that interesting? You know, conch shell and mathematically derived ideas of a perfect rectangle. And if you held a most plants and you looked down on it from the top, and you looked at the way that the leaves come out of the stem, it turns out that they rotate around the stem in the way that they come out. Now, I'm not smart enough to have noticed that, but there was a scientist, his name was Bacon. He noticed that if you look down on leaves like that, the branches come out according to this spiral. And you know what? That spiral is the same spiral that's in the conch shell. So it looks like there's some mathematical relationship that exists in the universe. And it seems to be true in just everything. It is so universal that there's actually a key on your calculator that's marked log, and then a superscript, little e. That's the number. And it's used over and over and over again in all kinds of things. It's amazing. It seems that there is a single intelligence behind everything that is. And that's what Jesus is saying here, what God is saying. I made all of these things. I'm the one that's behind all of this. And the conch shell didn't evolve with its shape separate from the way that leaves or stems, or whatever you call those things, the way that branches come off of a vine. Those things correspond to each other because there's the single unifying intelligence that's behind all of this. Has anybody else ever heard of that concept called log E? Yeah, you've heard of it, Faye?
Both of us have.
Yeah, I was amazed when I found out what that key on my calculator stood for.
I didn't know that that was on the calculator, but I knew about the number.
Well, you know, it's not on my phone, but it is on my HP calculator. I've got an older HP calculator. Log E is on there. It's really interesting. And what's beyond that is that I think this is my coherent way of understanding all of this. I think God wants us to find those relationships. And he wants us to appreciate it. I did not know, never realized that there's actually a mathematical way to describe different musical chords and different ways that the music typically works. Some of the greatest songwriters of all time, and, of course, that's coming from a guy who likes Simon and Garfunkel. some of the greatest songwriters of all time made use of mathematics in order to write their music and even the lyrics. So I think God wanted us to understand these things. I think part of that is why we can discover how to treat diseases. And I'm always amazed when Ted tells me how new drugs arise. Many times they arise from the treatment that we were using for a completely different disease. That's not surprising. Doesn't surprise me at all. If you have a single guiding intelligence, if it works over here, you'd expect it to work over here. Let's continue reading here in Proverbs 8 and read from 32 down through verse 35.
Now therefore, O sons, listen to me, for blessed are they who keep my ways. Heed instruction and be wise, and do not neglect it. Blessed is the man who listens to me, watching daily at my gates, waiting at my doorposts. For he who finds me finds life and obtains favor from the Lord. But he who sins against me injures himself. All those who hate me love death. Is that right?
Yeah. Yeah.
I didn't start at 27. I started at 31.
No, you started at 27, didn't you? You didn't. You started at 31.
Yeah.
Should go back to 27 and start there.
Okay. If all else fails, read the directions, huh? when he established the heavens, I was there. When he inscribed a circle on the face of the deep. When he made firm the skies above. When the springs of the deep became fixed. When he set for the sea its boundary, so that the water would not transgress his command, when he marked out the foundations of the earth, then I was beside him as a master workman, and I was daily his delight, rejoicing always before him, rejoicing in the world, his earth, and having my delight in the sons of men. Is that the right ones now?
Eileen, you did it right the first time.
Oh, well, now we got more in. More scripture can't hurt anybody.
Yeah. I think my take on all of this, if we'd started at verse 32 and read down through verse 35, if God was there in the beginning, I should listen to what God says.
For sure.
And I should make use of what God says. I think God wants us to see the relationships. Things didn't just arise because of random acts. Everything was organized. So I think God is behind it. I think the intelligence that we're looking for is God. And then you have to talk about what God's plan for man was. Why did God create man? I'm not sure that we have time left to get through this section of our discussion. So we'll hold this off until next week. But can anybody see other examples of how there's a single intelligence behind everything that exists?
Well, the interconnectedness of all of these biospheres of certain animals and population control and stuff like that. I mean, where you have, you know, rabbits and foxes and the balance of nature and all the things that are in that. If you get rid of one thing, then you have a problem with another. And how balanced that is, how perfect it is. And what did I read? Something about bunny rabbits that they had a built-in birth control that if for some reason they weren't killed off in a certain thing, that they automatically quit having too many rabbits, because then they'll eat themselves out of house and home.
It's interesting. I have noticed that the relationship between coyotes and rabbits seems to be secular and counter-secular. When the rabbits multiply, that's a lot of food for coyotes. Then you get a lot of coyotes. They eat the rabbits. Rabbit population decreases a little bit. Then the coyote population decreases because there's not enough food for the coyotes. And then the rabbit population increases again. And like you say, Carol, it is in balance. It's this incredible balance. And when you introduce a non-native species to an ecosystem, everything goes haywire. That's what happened because somebody released some pythons in the Everglades in Florida. And they don't have any natural predators, and they're just multiplying to beat the band.
I think the lionfish on the East Coast, somebody released their aquarium out into the ocean, and it's doing lots of damage. So
you look like you had a comment, Faye.
Yeah, I thought it was always interesting, symbiosis. Like, for example, we had sheep. Okay, so the sheep could have liver flukes, but the liver flukes had a host, and that host was a snail. But if we put out the chickens ate the snails, we had no more liver flukes. The host and the was necessary.
Yeah. So control the disease in your sheep by introducing chickens.
Right. And eating the eggs.
And eating eggs. Yeah, that way you get to have lamb and eggs.
There you go.
This is just an observation. I don't have any scriptural basis for this. It's just something that I observe is, you know, very, very intelligent people are scientists, and they see this. And they see this symbiosis, they see this repetition, they see these patterns. They assign it to some kind of intelligence or sometimes just chance, but they don't attribute it to God. And what that tells me is that faith is a very high level phenomenon. I mean, I don't know exactly how to describe it. I don't think that we should discount faith. I think I have been very guilty of that by saying, well, I don't understand all of this, so I'm just going to go on faith. And I think that discredits and discounts the faith that I have in God. And I don't tend to attribute as much, not value, but as much, I don't know how to say it, but I hold scientists in very high regard. I think they're very intelligent people. They've made huge advances. But I think we can't discredit faith. It makes me sad that they don't attribute all of this marvelous creation to a grand creator. And I think because we do, I think it shows a different kind of intelligence. It shows intelligence. And I don't think we should discredit that and discount that. And I think I've been guilty of that.
Yeah, and along with Kim's comment, I am amazed that scientists, well, for instance, it was scientists who discovered the concept of log E, and yet didn't have a belief in God. In other words, the evidence is there, and scientists see the evidence, and it's not that they see the evidence because they are predisposed, because they have some belief in God and they want to find evidence of God. They don't have a belief in God, and they still find the evidence.
Sophie.
Go ahead, Ron.
I think that most of them, if they really think about it, have a belief in a higher being, but they refuse to admit it, refuse to acknowledge it, because they'll look foolish amongst their peers. The popular belief, I know that there's been evidence offered that the earth is not as old as they all think it is. But they refuse to look at the evidence because it's there, and they'd have to admit that it's there, and they just they refuse to even look at it. I know they had evidence of the age of the earth and the formations of the rocks and whatnot like this. Evidence, you know, things that were said in the Bible or have borne out, but they refuse to admit it. You see that all the time. Yeah, 150 million years ago and that type of stuff. It's just, you know, it's a lot of this stuff has been debunked and is still taught in the schools, which is really sad.
Yeah, that's true. That's true.
And you know what? I think we all, it's human nature, we filter new information through a paradigm that we have already built. And I think Christians can be just as guilty of that. So I don't want to vilify scientists. I think that it's our job as Christians to try to reach them and to try to talk with them about, you know, all of this can't be a coincidence. It wasn't a result of accident. There was a master plan. There is a grand creator, and to try to shift that paradigm. I mean, we view things through our paradigm too. And I think sometimes we draw wrong conclusions, as do a lot of scientists. I think there are a lot of really honest scientists too, who say, you know what, this can't be just chance. There is a higher power. There's a designer, but they don't attribute it to God. And I think those are the people that we should be reaching, and we need to find a way to broaden our sphere of influence and to reach people with the gospel. And I think those hearts are receptive. They're ready. They're seeking. You know, I know we know a lot of Christians who are doctors and are scientists and they're honest scientists and they're honest Christians. So I do think that we tend to, as human beings, tend to view new information through our paradigms that we've built. And some of them are very false paradigms, like Ron said, that they have built through their education. And once you build on a flimsy foundation, any new information is going to be kind of caught up in that. Just some thoughts.
Dean?
Yes, go ahead, Carol.
You were talking about abortion and when life starts. Well, I think God tells us when life starts because he says life is in the blood. And so I think when you have blood, then you have life. And the reason I say that is if you go to a parasite like mistletoe, it's growing off of a tree, but it's still mistletoe. I mean, it's sucking all of its life off of the mistletoe, off of the tree. And if you have a symbiotic relationship, both things benefit from the relationship. So just because that baby hasn't been born yet doesn't mean that it's alive, because in nature, they have names for these things that aren't born, basically aren't able to live outside of the womb, like the mistletoe is a parasite. So they don't apply the same paradigms as Kim would say to the same thing.
True. Well, guys, we're out of time. We'll continue this next week.
It's not 7 yet, Dean.
I'm sorry?
I said it's not 7 yet. We didn't start until 6.
That's true. You're cutting us short.
That happens to me consistently because I'm used to starting at 7:30, and then when the clock on the wall gets to the 30, I think I'm out of time. Okay, let's keep going. What's man's role in all of this? So God created, and what's my responsibility in terms of this creation? And I tell you, I think this has some really far-reaching implications. Can somebody read Psalms 8 and just start at verse 3 and read down through verse 6?
I consider your heavens, the work of your fingers, the moon and the stars which you have ordained. What is man that you take thought of him? And the son of man that you care for him. Yet you have made him a little lower than God, and you crown him with glory and majesty. You make him to rule over the works of your hands. You have put all things under his feet, all sheep and oxen and all the beasts of the field, the birds of the heaven and the fish of the sea, whatever passes through the paths of the sea. O Lord, our Lord, how majesty is your name in all the earth.
Thank you. So, here we are. What's our relationship to everything that's created? How would you describe it based on this?
Caretaker.
Okay. Caretaker.
Steward, but also being able to use what is available for our own sustenance.
Okay. Those two things are not contradictory. Being a caretaker and using it for our benefit, right?
Right.
Just like the farmer is in many ways a caretaker of his animals, he uses them for his benefit. But no farmer wants to mistreat his animals. If he mistreats his animals, they don't produce for his benefit. So he takes care of his animals. It's this weird conundrum. The farmer takes care of his animals knowing that one day he's going to kill the animal and eat the animal. But there's nothing contradictory about that. You know, I must say I listen to the PETA folks all the time, and they talk about how how farmers abuse their animals. Well, my grandfather was a farmer. His animals ate even if he couldn't. He took care of his animals when he had to neglect himself. And anybody grew up in a 4-H family and you slept in the barn with your cow when your cow was sick? I didn't do that, but I remember going to the county fair and you would see these kids, 10, 12 years old, sleeping in a stall with their bull because they needed to keep their bull calm. That's, man is the caretaker. Man is to be over the works of God's hands, not for the purpose of abuse. If you look back at Genesis 1, and verse 28, I think, is really an important verse. In verse 28, he says, God blessed Adam and Eve, them, and God said to them, be fruitful, multiply, replenish the earth, subdue it, have dominion over the fish of the sea, over the fowl of the air, over every living thing that moves upon the face of the earth. But he says, I want you to multiply and replenish the earth. This is a really interesting word here, replenish. That's to make it full. So you take care of it. And you're going to use it, but take care of it. In my mind, what that tells me is that I'm supposed to understand how things work. I can't take care of it if I don't understand how it works. So I think Genesis 1 at verse 28 says, take the time to understand how the world works. Let's look at Proverbs 6. Let me get to Proverbs, not Psalms. I just think this is really an interesting passage. Yeah, maybe let's go back to Proverbs 6 and start at verse 1 and read down through verse 10. Can somebody read that?
I can do that. My son, if you have become surety for your neighbor, have given a pledge for a stranger, if you have been snared with the words of your mouth, have been caught with the words of your mouth, do this then, my son, and deliver yourself. Since you have come into the hand of your neighbor, go humble yourself and importune your neighbor. Give no sleep to your eyes, nor slumber to your eyelids. Deliver yourself like a gazelle from the hunter's hand, and like a bird from the hand of the fowler. Go to the ant, O sluggard. Observe her ways and be wise. Which, having no chief officer or ruler, prepares her food in the summer and gathers her provision in the harvest. How long will you lie down, O sluggard, when you arise from your sleep? A little sleep, a little slumber, a little folding of the hands to rest.
And then verse 11.
Your poverty will come in like a vagabond, and your need like an armed man. Interesting that who in the world would study slugs long enough to figure out what they're doing? Kind of interesting.
Yeah, who would look at ants and figure out what ants are doing? I stomp on ants. I should probably pay more attention to them.
It used to be popular to have an ant farm. You could watch them, but I don't know about a slug.
Well, I dropped my ant farm. That was the last one I ever had. I think the point is, if you want to learn how to live your life, look at the way the world works. This is a passage that's not talking about observing animals. The purpose of this passage here is, my son, you've taken yourself, you have made an agreement with a stranger, your surety for your friend. You've snared yourself with the words of your mouth. Here's what you should do. It's not about ants. But if we understand the created world, if we'll pay attention, that's going to help us figure out how to live our lives. And this kind of understanding should not be neglected. Pay attention. So other comments about man and his relationship with all of creation. Okay. Is this something that we ought to pursue? Here's the way that the best and the brightest of the Jewish kids were described when they were taken into captivity by Nebuchadnezzar. Now, remember who we're talking about. This is the group that includes men like Daniel and men like Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego. This is the best and the brightest. This is the description of them. What I want you to see here is that I think God approves of people trying to understand things. Daniel 1 at verse 4. He's describing the best and the brightest. He says, children in whom was no blemish, well favored, and skillful in all wisdom, cunning in knowledge, understanding science, and such as had ability in them to stand in the king's palace, and whom he might teach the learning and the tongue of the Chaldeans. So he looked for the best and the brightest. He wanted them to come into the palace, and he was going to teach them the learning of the Chaldeans. it's important to remember, this is the group that includes Daniel and Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego. There is a feeling sometimes that people that are Christians don't concern themselves with studying science. And I hear it all the time. I quit preaching and went back to graduate school. And there were some people that accused me of leaving God, that I had made shipwreck of faith. I was going to inevitably leave God because I had decided to pursue a graduate education. That kind of thinking dismays me. It's not saying that you need to pursue scientific education. It's not saying that at all. It's just saying that people that pursue it serve God. Now, they can leave God, and that's a possibility. And there are a lot of people that don't acknowledge God that you're going to come in contact with. When you do that, but that's not an argument against doing what you can to understand the world around us. Comments, thoughts at this point?
I think many people do think that Christians are narrow-minded and not well-learned, and yet this tells you that if you're Daniel and all of his people were well-rounded and knew lots. It's God's understanding that we learned out in the world that we apply to his word.
I agree with you, Carol, and that's it dismays me when I hear people say, well, you shouldn't pursue education. You shouldn't pursue learning about the world around you.
It actually helps you when you learn about what's all around you and how things are happening, because it helps you to understand so that you can tell somebody else. And there's nothing wrong with knowledge, of course, and it can be best used if you know what's going on in the world and what certain things are about.
Okay.
Paul was definitely well-rounded. He knew all about the Jewish law and the Old Testament, and God chose him to teach about the New Testament.
Good point. I didn't think about that one, but it's a good point. Again, I'm not saying that Christians have to be well educated. That's not what I'm saying at all. But I am saying that Christians will pursue education perhaps differently than people that aren't Christians.
Well, Daniel sure pointed out that his knowledge of God, and after it was all over, then the king recognized that they were men of God and they were not like the rest of them, because God was on their side. And so he took care of getting them out of the furnace and everything else. So,
good point. Good point. Let's look at Exodus 36. And I want you to see the description of some people among the Israelites. And then I want you to look at how they used what they knew to produce good. So let's read Exodus 36, verses 1 through 5. And if you can't pronounce the names, we're all reading along with you. So when you get to the name, you can just go and keep going.
Was that Exodus 35, you said?
36.
36?
Yeah, 36 verses 1 through 5.
Okay. Kind of looks like it starts in the middle of a sentence, doesn't it? So Bezalel, Oholiab, and every skilled person to whom the Lord has given skill and ability to know how to carry out all the work of the constructing of the sanctuary are to do the work just as the Lord has commanded. Then Moses summoned Bezalel, and Oholiab, and every skilled person to whom the Lord had given ability and who was willing to come and do the work. They received from Moses all the offerings the Israelites had brought to carry out the work of constructing the sanctuary. And the people continued to bring freewill offerings morning after morning. So all the skilled craftsmen who were doing all the work on the sanctuary left their work and said to Moses, "The people are bringing more than enough for doing the work the Lord commanded to be done."
Okay. So these guys that are doing the work, where did they get that knowledge? Do you think God miraculously taught them how you have to size the beams so that they'll support the weight of the roof and all that kind of stuff?
Well, it said that he gave them the skill and the ability, and perhaps that came through diligent practice and learning their craft. But he also gave them instruction on how to do it. So they may have used their expertise that they had developed over a period of time that was God-given, certainly, to apply to the instructions that God had given. That's kind of the way I read it.
Okay.
Because they came to the project. Says every skilled person to whom the Lord had given ability and was willing to come to do the work. So they also had to do it by their own free will. So they chose to undertake this task. So it sounds to me like they came with skills and abilities that they had already sort of honed, that the Lord had given them, obviously had given them opportunity to learn this skill. And then they applied it to the instruction that the Lord had given them.
Okay. And they built the sanctuary.
Yes.
Beautiful. What they created was to the glory of God. Now, I have never been to Europe, and I've never seen the great cathedrals that were built in old medieval Europe. But I understand from a lot of people that the artists who worked on those beautiful buildings most of the time did not sign their names. You know, they wanted to do that work to the glory of God, not necessarily for their own credit. And I'm very impressed with that idea. Just like I think a lot of very intelligent Christian thinkers, Christian teachers, create wonderful works and they never sell them. They create it. They make it freely available to anyone that wants to use it without any thought of profit. That to me is impressive.
When I look at old time scripture, what fascinates me is when Solomon built the temple, David put everything together, was not allowed to build it, but Solomon was. But that was the first prefab house. At least it was recorded, because nothing, there were no hammers, no tools at all used in the construction of the temple. It was all done somewhere else and hauled in. Amazing how many thousands of people that worked in the gathering of raw material to put this together. But all the actual work was done somewhere else, and it was brought in and put together like a prefab house. Fascinating to me.
It truly is. Truly is. I hadn't realized that, but you're right now that you mention it. So using the knowledge that we have of how things work together, using the knowledge of how all of creation works, makes it possible for us to do some amazing things. And I am forever amazed at what scientists discover. And what they're able to accomplish. Their ability to understand the human body is fantastic. But remember, behind all of this is a single intelligent creator, which is God. The world is not chaotic. If it was chaotic, we couldn't discover how things work. But because it's not chaotic, we can discover all the things that we have discovered about the human body and about how things work. And that just amazes me.
Dean?
Yeah.
I've been looking for this verse. I finally found it. Exodus 31. Now the Lord spoke to Moses, saying, "See, I have called by name Bezalel, the son of Uri, the son of Hur, of the tribe of Judah." And then he says, I, the Lord, have filled him with the Spirit of God in wisdom, in understanding, in knowledge, and in all kinds of craftsmanship, to make artistic designs for work in gold, in silver, in bronze, in the cutting of stones for settings, in the carving of wood, that he may work in all kinds of craftsmanship. And then it goes on, talking about, I have put skill that they may make all that I have commanded you, the tent of meeting, and so forth. So it was from God, this knowledge, if I understand this right.
And it's not from their own ability.
And I think that's why Larry Haverstock said that even if the Jews did get the temple area back, they couldn't rebuild it because God instilled it in the one and the men that did it, and he didn't write everything down.
That's an interesting thought.